What I loved about the Pennine Way thing was I got to share it with a lot of people. UTMB, I mean, you got wonderful crowds there and stuff, but you're not really, you know, you're running away from people or trying to catch people. And an FKT is a bit different, isn't it? And just so many people turned out to run with me or to hand me a cup of tea or to just support me at a roadside or just shout something, hopefully, which was probably supportive. At the moment, that feels a bit more special because it was just this big shared thing.
Kia ora everyone, that was Damien Hall. I'm Matt Raymond.
I'm Eugene Bingham.
And this is Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners. As ever on Dirt Church Radio, we are supported by Scott Running. Their shoes are fantastic. I have three pairs that I'm going through at the moment, and each one reveals its mysteries to me in ever-growing ways, like staring at one of those pictures that you'd get in the 90s that you'd look at it and it just looked like nothing, and then you'd have to stand close to it and that would be The Last Supper or, you know, The Scream.
The ways of the Scott will be revealed. Mm. Oh, yeah, that sounds intriguing.
That's right. It's like the mystery.
Yeah.
Maybe it's drawing on my Catholicism. I don't know, but if you go to scottrunning.nz, check out the Kinabalu Ultra RC. Fantastic shoe carrying me and you.
Yes.
Hither and yon over this winter period. Just fantastic, fantastic shoes. As ever, scottrunning.nz for some fantastic daps, as Damien Hall would say.
Do it. You know this Wild Things code, DCR 2020?
Yes.
So not only do you get 15 months for the price of 12, they also chip in and make a donation to the DCR Patreon account.
They do. They give us a little bit of
sign-up. Yeah.
They give us a little bit of a...
They do. It's lovely. It's lovely every month. Thank you for using that code. Keep using it. Keep using it because you get something out of it. We get something out of it. The other thing you get is... you get access to heaps of cool stuff through VIP. So did you know that there are 1,174 runs in the world famous trail directory?
I didn't know that.
All the way from Stewart Island to Cape Reinga.
Those of you who don't know Aotearoa, that's from the bottom to the top or the top to the bottom. It always makes me, actually, I thought that copy was very much redolent of Woody Guthrie. You know, this land is your land, this land is our land.
Mm. That's what you saying?
No, we probably shouldn't. But anyway, okay. Wild Things are fantastic supporters of Dirt Church Radio. About. And they're a fantastic community stalwarts. And yeah, they directly benefit us. If you sign up, DCR 2020, do it. What's their website?
Wildthings.club.
That's it, wildthings.club. In Christchurch... something's happening. Further Faster is doubling in size. It actually is doubling in size. They've taken over the shop next door and they're expanding it at the moment and it's going to be amazing. So the best outdoors retailer in the country is going to get twice as awesome.
Is this because of Jacob's calves?
It is, yeah. They're just like punched through the wall like the Kool-Aid guy and Family Guy that burst through the wall and goes, oh yeah, but it's just Jacob's calves. Smash, straight through. No, it's going to be fantastic. I think they were talking about a climbing wall. Rocky was saying lots of things. He was very, very excited. But if
there's
you go to Further Faster, yeah, there's a bar and a dog serves you drink.
We need to do a Further Faster live show.
We need
show.
To get down there and do a Further Faster live show. Yeah, let's put that out. But if you go to furtherfaster.co.nz, I mean, they've been cranking through level two. Their store is open and they're doing... online orders. I actually bought something off the website today. I bought another Keep Cup, a Life Venture Keep Cup. Fantastic. They sell Montane, which is just really great gear. And yeah, they look after us really well. So if you go to furtherfaster.co.nz for all your outdoors ting.
They go something like Further Faster, they're in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Oh, Further Faster, they're in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Dirt Church Radio.
Episode 108.
We made it.
We did. Here we are. It's interesting times, all right? So,
sure is. We're sort of tentatively crawling out of lockdown three for us in Tamaki Makaurau, aren't we? In
Auckland. Yeah. And more of the same for everyone else.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah. It's kind of weird, isn't this 2.5 and the difference. So, I mean, sorry for overseas listeners who really, you know, dealing with their own problems. But, so 2.5. So we've still got restrictions around here, haven't we, that they haven't got in the rest of the country around gatherings and stuff. But we're okay. We're getting through this.
So let's hope the only way is down, right?
Yeah. How often can you say that?
The only way is down through the levels.
Yeah.
I mean, it has some, and it has some repercussions, right? Like everyone's probably got their eye on certain marathons and other events that are coming up.
Yeah, well, the Kinloch race on this weekend has put out an email as we go to air saying, sorry, Aucklanders, you can't come down. And fair enough. You know, that's the advice that the Ministry of Health is giving anyway. That Aucklanders can't, you know, we still got to sort of keep to the 10 gathering, even if we go out of Auckland. So you can see the rationale. And I guess it's just once again, race organisers put in really awkward positions, you know. It's just been the life of 2020, hasn't it? It really sucks. So
absolutely. So, I mean, so we're actual pariahs, not just moral and social ones.
Yeah. I saw somebody today saying that Aucklanders should have to ring a bell. You know, unclean, unclean. Anyway, I know you love us. I know you love us, rest of New Zealand. I know you do. Anyway, hey, amazing, amazing feedback and araha for Kate Southern after our chat last week.
Absolutely. And no
wonder. Yeah.
Just, I was quite shocked. I mean, I was and I wasn't. I mean, I knew that she, you know, she's a very integral part of the community. And yeah, the love was strong.
Yeah. And it was just so, I mean, she was just so calm, so sharing and just genuine. She's a genuine good person, isn't she? Good human being.
Absolutely. Kate the running lady. So
yeah, that was I still have no idea how she gets everything done on a day.
No. Wow. Neither do I.
I'd be chasing my tail. Time management, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, speaking of time management, I'm gutted. So gutted that I missed this conversation. Returning champion Damien Hall.
Yeah. Well, I was gutted that you went there, and Damien was gutted you went there as well. Especially because he wanted to do a Britpop chat with you. He started bringing up Britpop, and I said, "Sorry, you know, Matt is our musical king." But we did get some revelations, which will come out. You'll come out during the conversation. But yeah, we had a chat about his extraordinary FKT, fastest known time in the Pennine Way. But you know, as is always the way with Damien, we took plenty of diversions, and there's some really interesting topics, including we talked about how to reduce environmental impacts on events, which, you know, might seem a bit of a moot point in the moment when not many of us can race, but obviously races will be back someday. And, you know, there's some ideas that are popping up in the UK that he's sort of talking about around, you know, maybe rather than taking a race shirt, donating it to someone who needs it. Maybe instead of a medal or a t-shirt, having a tree planted instead. There's some interesting ideas around. So just, you know, have a listen. And the stuff on the FKT, I had no idea the preparation that had gone into it, and amazing. But anyway, how are you doing, man?
Yeah, I was actually just reflecting on the whole thing about the medal and the t-shirt, and I think that anything, and I've long held that, you know, we should look at streams for races, you know, like I don't want a ceremonial t-shirt necessarily, or even a medal. And if we could do things a bit cheaper or whatever, but certainly the environmental aspect, it'd be great. It would be, he's a clever man, old Damien Hall, isn't he?
Well, he was talking about things that other people are doing, to be fair, but he certainly is. Yeah. I did blame him for COVID as well.
Oh, good.
Given what he talked about last year.
There's hypocrisy. Yeah. No, how have I been? I've had a shitter of a day.
You have.
A car got broken into. You know, just this work's been super busy. I've been tired. I dropped my headphones just before we came to air, you know. So now my lovely headphones are kind of busted. But yeah, it's just been... it's been a complete ball bag, and I can't dress it up any more than that. I think I would be being insincere if I tried to say that it was anything else. But you know, that's okay. And you know, they can't all be you know, sometimes they have to be sow's ears. They can't all be silk purses, right? So yeah. And how have you been going?
Yeah, okay. I'm looking forward to being able to catch up with you for a run again.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be good. Get back on track. I've been doing my Arcalese exercises, some stretching and mixing up runs with rides on the bike, and I guess sort of following the process is what I'm trying to do, you know. Yeah, Rotorua Marathon coming up in a few weeks, and as we talked about, I don't know, you know, we're just going to have to be keeping checking the emails, see if it's still going on. They put out an email recently where they said if it's level two, but it'll go ahead. Level one, it will go ahead, which obviously we're not in that yet. And to watch the space, there's a decision, you know, I guess, yeah, there's so much up in the air, but, you know, it's just a race, fingers crossed.
And will the Blue Lake 24 go ahead?
Yeah, well, I guess they're in the same position, aren't they, really? It's the same weekend, isn't it? Which, by the way, sucks quite a bit. But anyway, moving along.
It does, it does.
Yes, 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 yes.
Right, hit the red button.
All right. Stuff you should know. Okay, I got an amazing email from a great friend of the show, Carmela Heyman, who is a colleague of mine from Stuff. She's the editor of The Press in Christchurch and is the Christchurch and Otago editor for Stuff and a trail runner. And I said, do you mind if I share this because... I think there's a lot in it for not only me, but lots of people. So she'd had a bit of a bad run of injuries, and she wrote to me about, after hearing about the Achilles niggles that I've been having and grizzling about riding on a bike. And she said, look, just like you, I also deeply resent having to cycle when I can't run and find this happening more and more as I get older. But I did want to share a story with you, which I found has helped me when I'm riding uphill on my mountain bike. On a recent bike ride, I was coming down the hill. I passed a man heading up. He was on a hand bike. The rider had no legs and was tackling a particularly steep section just with the power of his arms. It was very impressive and well beyond what I would be capable of. So it really reminded me that while I was not able to run at that time, I still did have the power of my legs and crucially my quad muscles to help me get up the hills. And of course, if it ever became too hard, I could always jump off and walk. Not an option for this rider who had nothing but sheer grit to fall back on. It was very humbling. Please don't think I'm sharing this story to make you feel guilty for commenting on your frustration. I just wanted to share it as the encounter has really helped me adjust my thinking. Yeah, it did.
There's always an opportunity, I think, in this life to reframe, right?
Yeah.
And the two things can exist. Like, dude on the hand bike's out there getting after it.
Yeah.
You know? And we'll probably look at someone who perhaps, I don't know, couldn't do that.
And yeah.
But there's always an opportunity.
There's always perspectives, isn't there? You're right. Yeah. Perspectives. And I mean, I certainly wasn't in a position where I was feeling sorry for myself, and Carmela wasn't saying that I was, and she certainly wasn't trying to, I got that she wasn't trying to pull a guilt trip on me or anything. It was just, I thought of it as just a wonderful gift, and I wanted to share it, and I asked her and she was cool with it. And also, I'd really love to see that rider. Holy moly. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Respect. Some people are really incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway,
and you think, yeah, I mean, it's always that thing, isn't it? You'd like to think that, and I'm sure, I don't know about you, if I've had these thoughts. If something happened to me, I'd do this, and I'd be out there doing chin-ups before too long. But you know, I don't know if I could. And it takes a certain, you know, a very special type of individual to face that much adversity and sort of keep on cracking.
As you say, get out there and go after it.
Mm.
Wow. Yeah.
So what happened on the weekend?
Yeah, well, there was this IAU, the International Association of Ultra Runners, virtual 6-hour run. So, which was They said, in the spirit of universal camaraderie and uplifting of morale, we've planned a virtual IAU 6-hour global solidarity run for our ultra running family to engender athletic interest and friendly global fun. Because there'd been so many events, world championships and so on, cancelled. So there were, in the end, there were 426 runners from around the world on the virtual start line, and New Zealand had its own team, which had some pretty great names in it.
Yeah. So the men's team was Andrew McDowell, Wayne Botha, and Stuart Hughes.
Yep.
And the women?
Yep. Emma Bassett, Fiona Hayvice, Emily Salzberg, Dawn Tuffrey, and Mal Aiken.
Wow.
And the great John Bowden was their manager. So there you go.
Yeah.
Look, the idea was you just ran your own. You ran your own race, as it were, and like Mal Aiken ran down the coast on the roads in Wellington, and Fiona was running around the south coast, wasn't she? Dawn and Andrew, I saw, were on tracks running round and round. So you could sort of choose your poison, as it were. And at the end of the day, the results aren't out globally as we go to air, but Wayne both very generously sent me the New Zealand results. And so Andrew McDowell ran 73.58 kilometres.
Wow.
Yeah. Wayne Botha ran 60.47 kilometres, and Stuart Hughes ran 41.7 kilometres, which are all, you know, amazing.
Very impressive.
Yeah, very impressive. And in the women, it's gone down. Yeah. So Emma Bassett ran 64.26 kilometres.
Jeez.
Fiona Hayvice, 65.56. Emily Salzberg, 56.4. Dawn Tuffrey, 69.09, I think it is. It's just a little bit thing down my. I'm not sure if you can see it, Matt.
It's tiny on my computer.
Yeah. I did a screen grab. I'm just going to try and see if I can see that any bigger. Yes, 69.09 kilometres for Dawn. Deborah Brett did 58.58. And then listen to this. Mal Aiken, 73.2 kilometres, which, is extraordinary. Amazing, amazing run. Well, they all are. Those particularly, you know, those performances up over 60 kilometres.
Yeah.
And both Mal and Andrew getting up over 70 kilometres.
Wow.
Wow. You know, that's some great running. And having to tough it out on your own, doing it solo is extraordinary. So, you know, I guess all the Wellington runners had to contend with headwinds.
Yeah.
You know, just as I say, doing it on your own is tough, isn't it? But well done, you lot.
Yeah, I can't imagine running that far, actually, in 6 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Extraordinary. So there is some suggestion that Mal may have broken a New Zealand record, which...
Yeah.
But Wayne was saying there's issues around... verifying it and so on. So I guess we'll bring an update next week. Certainly not suggesting anything, but just in terms of being able to claim a record and what you have to do and so on. So that's all being worked through at the moment. Fingers crossed.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the amazing New Zealand cross country.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happened on the weekend. And Dwight Grieve.
Yes.
First in the Masters race, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But they couldn't call it, well, they didn't call it the New Zealand Champs, did they? Because
no.
We couldn't, me and you couldn't go, and anyone else from Auckland couldn't go. So it wasn't fair.
Yeah. So they called it the New Zealand Cross Country Challenge.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dwight. Woohoo. I wonder if somebody did the moose call.
I don't know. 29.08 on the 8 kilometre course. He probably did. And there was, he was probably wearing a morph suit as well. There was also. Southland won two in the 40 to 44 age group, which helped them win the 40 to 40 age group team title too.
Yeah, amazing.
And I
well
read
done,
this.
Dwight.
I've been basically high. I've been under a rock, man. But I read this in Stuff today, and there's a controversy in the 50 to 54 age group. Robbie Johnson, double Olympian, won but was disqualified for spitting on the course.
Yeah,
and there were COVID rules in place about it, and so he was banned.
Mm. He was the only one all day, apparently, but he finished in first place, and then he was cooling down, and someone came up to him, tapped him on the shoulder and said, DQ, mate, on your horse. Somebody said he wasn't within spitting distance of second place. Boom, boom. But, yeah, so there were very clear rules which said because it was because of the pandemic, competitors were told that while racing, please avoid spitting or discharging mucus from your nose in view of others or close to other competitors. Anyone deemed to be spitting in an offensive manner could be disqualified. Robbie was saying that, very distinguished athlete, of course, and he was saying that there was supposed to be some sort of warning system or something which didn't apply. You know, they just banned him. So he was a bit aggrieved about things. But, you know, tricky times. I'm not sure where to come down on this one, so to speak. You know, we are in a pandemic that's being spread by mucus and...
Yeah, things. Look, at the risk of... but this is the thing, right? And I don't know. I mean, I don't... Like, well, come at me if you want. Where do you draw the line? Mm. If you have a rule and then you let Robbie do it, but then can I do it? And I'm in, you know, I'm the Lantern Rouge. Can I spit? Can I, you know, I don't know.
It's,
there's no roadmap for this stuff. So at least we can, at least we can race.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's right. That's right. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And then old Poe Capel.
Well, amazing. It was UTMB weekend this weekend, wasn't it?
Well, it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and if, tell us about Powell.
Yeah, well, of course, he won UTMB last year, Ultra Trail de Mont Blanc, with his good mate Scotty Hawker coming in third place. And it was supposed to be on this weekend. Of course, it wasn't. So couldn't be because of the pandemic. So he decided to have a crack at the course record over the weekend. And he won last year in 20 hours and 19 minutes, which was a record. And he set out to try and run the 170 kilometres in under 20 hours, which would have been stunning. But things didn't go quite as planned, and he only ran 21 hours and 17 minutes, which, you know, come
I mean,
on,
it's
dude.
It's ridiculous if you tried to, if you ran 21 hours around a track, you'd be like, I did really well. But you know,
over
UTMB. And when I think about, you know, Andrew McDowell and Tom Agusa talking to us about it, you know, people we run with, people we know, and they're talking about how difficult it was. I think, it's just...
A solo run of 21
yeah,
and 70
and,
minutes.
And I think that would be more difficult.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Amazing.
Amazing. He said, it was incredible to run this year. Truly one of my best experiences. Truly one of the best experiences of my life. It's been such a difficult year for everyone, and the support I've received from people all around the world has been amazing. For now, I'll take some time and rest with my family, and then who knows...
He's a G. He really is.
He really is.
As my daughter would say.
Yeah.
But look, you know, moving swiftly through, we're on to greatest run ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write in and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. It might just be a run around the block, something that's sung to you for some reason. It could be a 21-hour UTMB solo.
Could be.
You know, send
run
it in to us.
73 hours in
73
kilometres
in
6 hours. Yeah.
Send it in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And... thank you for people who are sending them in. They are thin on the ground, so please keep them coming. And this is from Jana Cowley, and she says, hey team, I feel like I need to answer the challenge to Aucklanders in lockdown. An easy choice would be my fastest, which was the Paris Marathon. I was super fit by my own standards. It was an incredible experience, and I managed to beat my PB by half an hour, despite, or maybe because of, pausing for a wee Beaujolais at 37 kilometres. It was a definite upgrade on Powerade, and my secret to a PB. Get a little drunk. Another great run was my first Ironman in 2014. It was perfectly paced despite an injury and no running for a month leading up to the race. My time was a lot faster than I expected, and I had no issues at all on the three laps other than having to wear a poncho and carry a glow stick in the dark. The rest is a blur. Triathletes are funny bunch, eh? So it might seem strange that my greatest run ever was my slowest marathon. The organisers gave me a complimentary entry into the Queenstown Marathon in 2016. I didn't run much that year, and I'd just come home from a three-week trip to South America. I joked that I'd been altitude training. I was very relaxed and totally undertrained, but it was my ninth marathon, so I figured I could go wing it. The first 10K was pretty rad, and I stopped for a photo op with a pet alpaca, as you do. About 16K, I started talking to a girl who was running the same pace as me. She was from Canada and running the Seven Marathons on Seven Continents Challenge, so we talked nonstop after that. The Air New Zealand signs were so funny that we took a lot of photos. The scenery on course was absolutely stunning. We reached the ridiculous big hill at the 30K mark, and encouraged by a lady doing her first marathon, at that point she'd run further than ever. It was really neat to be out here for her and assure her she'd finished. As we reached the lakefront and headed back into town, I realised that we'd better put our foot down. We were hot and tired and starting to freak out a little. My bossy streak appeared and decided what pace we needed to do, which was better late than never. We ran the gauntlet to Queenstown Bar. We ran the gauntlet of Queenstown Bars and made our way to the best ever finish shoot. It's a runway, so we charged down to the finish line right in the middle of prize giving. Whoops! So I came away with a medal, some amazing photos, and a great friend winning. Cheers, Jana. Awesome.
Fantastic. Wow. That's a great... I think you got three greatest runs ever in one there.
Yeah, yeah. At the Queenstown Marathon...
The Paris one looks... sounds pretty good. And the Ironman one with the glow stick sounds pretty good as well. So,
absolutely.
Wow. What were you saying? Sorry?
Oh, just the Queenstown Marathon, how stunning it looks.
Yeah. Yeah. Picturesque.
Picturesque. I'm pining a little bit for events. Can I just say?
Yeah, you can say that. You can say that. Hey... People have been raving about the relapse mail out.
My nose is dry. Hmm? Yeah, and I'm pacing back and forth. I was pining. That's what you do. Oh, go off your food, nose goes dry, just pace back and forth. But that's I wish I could say that I had a part in that, but no, that's all Sean and Madeline, and that's the kind of people they are.
So what happened? You got...
So you received, had all the stuff, because they somehow came onto, like, they've got like 20,000 pairs of lactic turkey sunglasses or something like that. And then, I'm sure it's not 20,000, but it was a few. And we had a bunch of the cards printed up, you know, for the DNFs and stuff. Mm. And a bunch of buffs and things like that. And just being the good sorts that they are, they really wanted to, you know, to koha and to afi the people who had put so much time into training and really looking forward to being there, and so sent this lovely little care package. It was just, wow, just very sweet. And that's the type of people that you're dealing with.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing.
Good sorts.
Good sorts. Good buggers.
Good buggers. Right. Yep.
Now, rest of you, if you want to be good buggers, in our opinion, send us in the greatest run ever. Go on.
Yep. Do it.
Do it.
Sean and Madeline would. Anyway. Onto our show, and again, may I say how gutted I am to have missed this conversation, but I'm stoked that you got it, though, because it's fantastic.
Yeah, I was gutted too. But we had a chat with him on the show last year, when we decided to get him back to catch up with him again about his extraordinary run on the Pennine Way in the UK, and also because he's always really interesting to talk to. And we talked about the run itself, but there was so much more that we wanted to know, you know. So the reminder is that the Pennine Way is a 431-kilometre trail between the town of Edale near Manchester up to Kirk Yeltham in Scotland. And it had an FKT of 2 days, 17 hours and 20 minutes from fell runner Mike Hartley, which stood for 31 years. And then John Kelly, the legendary Barclay Marathon's finisher, lowered it by 40 minutes last week. And then just over a week later, Damien, who, by the way, is mates with John Kelly.
Yeah, they seem like good mates, eh?
Yeah. So he went and broke the new record 9 days later and lowered it to 2 days, 13 hours and 34 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. So we had a chat about his preparation for the record attempt, which was absolutely meticulous. We also talked about his history with the Pennine Way and the history of the actual route itself, which was really fascinating, and a whole bunch more, including how we can all do better for the planet. Damien Hall.
Ditchit Radio.
Right, joining us all the way from the village of Box again, Damien Hall. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You're most welcome. It is kind of weird because sort of pulling the curtain back, of course, when we ring people initially, we have a bit of a chat and then we do this fake intro again. So it is kind of strange. But yes. Hello. Oh, hi, Damien. I didn't know you were on the end of the line here.
How have you been?
Yeah, we've been good. Thank you. Now, look, just to jump straight into it, we've got a bit of a bone to pick with you.
You said this to me last time. We had a nice friendly chat and then you suddenly hit me with a big... Yeah. I remember the big political, you lured me in, and it was the big political hard-hitting question. So you're going to do that?
That's how we go. Well, we've got a very serious accusation to level at you, because the last time you were on, you talked about how you weren't going to fly, you were going to stop traveling so much, and then suddenly the whole world can't travel so much. Now, we're not about spinning conspiracy theories, but but is there a connection here? Like, are you the grandmaster behind all this?
I'm going to let people, you know, decide, but you know, it was a bit annoying.
It is.
At the beginning of the year, I was like, I'm hardly going to fly. I'm going to have a minimal. I got an independent company to audit me and make me give me a plan to be carbon negative for the year. So I was like, I'm hardly going to fly. I'm going to get the train. I'm hardly going to use my car. I can do all these amazing things. And then everyone just copies me.
Yeah, exactly.
That might be a bit insensitive, but hopefully that's taken in the spirit of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then all the races were cancelled. No one's racing. No one's going to races.
Yeah.
So in a way, I applaud. I can't really applaud what's happened. But
no.
Yeah, I mean, we've all had a low carbon footprint so far this year, which is in some ways is great.
Yes. Yes. And there are lots and lots of bad things about it, of course, and we acknowledge that in all seriousness. And how are you guys going in the UK at the moment?
Yeah, we're in that. Well, most of the time we've been looking down at New Zealand going, wow, they're doing it properly. They know what they're doing. And, you know, at risk of getting too political, our leaders aren't, well, you know, they're idiots. So, we are going to, the kids are going back to school shortly. I've got two going back to school, but they've been off school for about 6 months.
Wow.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess for a while there was a kind of pretty thorough lockdown. I panic bought a treadmill for a lot of money and sold it for a lot less money a few months later, unused. We sort of were in lockdown for a couple of months. We were allowed to sort of run kind of once a day or exercise once a day. Luckily, they didn't stipulate how far you could run or how long. And I don't think they were really thinking of ultra runners. So I think most ultra runners went, oh, well, you know, if you do 4 or 6 hours, that's still only once a day. And it did feel like lots of people were running, lots more people were running, and cycling, which was nice. And then I don't know how much of the news kind of traveled around the world, but suddenly lockdown was over or sort of eased a lot. And everyone went out trying to break FKTs, which was quite exciting.
Yeah.
And we're still... it feels like we're out of lockdown. We've got people have masks on in shops and things, but most things, I think 90% of things are back to normal-ish.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a bit weird. Well, so like for you guys, like I heard you had a long spell where there were no cases, but maybe you've got a few now or something.
Yeah, so we had a long stretch where we were down in what we call level one, which is basically everything's on except the borders are closed, so you can't fly here. But apart from that, we were sort of trucking along. And then there's been an outbreak in Auckland, which when you look at, which is where Matt and I live, and that's why Matt is back at work and on the front line. Well, not that he wasn't working anyway, sorry. That's why he's busy back at work because things have really ramped up again. But when you look at the numbers compared to what's happening elsewhere, I mean, we're sort of getting, you know, 8 or 9 cases a day. So it's not...
Oh, right.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a thing. But we've taken it very seriously. We've gone back into a lockdown.
Wow.
Not the strictest one, but we're still in a lockdown. I'm having to work from home.
Go out running?
I can still go out running. Yep. So,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. but there's you know, only essential businesses open and that sort of thing. So that's been a bit strange. And we come out of it on Sunday. So that will have been 2.5 weeks at that. So that's been...
Okay.
Bit of a shock when we all thought it was behind us, but it's anyway. But you guys did it really tough over there for a long, long time. And you know that the world is getting into a bad place when Damien Hall buys a treadmill.
Yeah, I got very worried. I got very worried because I coached some people, and one of my clients was living in Spain, and he said I can't even go out running. So he was running up and down the stairs in his flat, like between the flats, in the block of flats every day. And I was, you know, huge admiration for him, but I was really worried that would happen here. So I panic bought this treadmill that stayed in its box in the shed for a while. And our lockdown didn't get that severe, thankfully.
Yeah. There was a video I saw of an Italian mayor who, so in Italy, you had to get a letter or something, didn't you, to be able to go out and run. And there was an Italian mayor who went out and did a social media post complaining about all these people claiming that they were runners, because suddenly being a runner was this great status. It gave you freedom. It's like, don't kid yourself. You haven't run since we were at school.
I did have someone, someone did a great kind of spoof on Strava when Boris Johnson announced, yeah, just once a day. Someone, I don't know who it was, but someone who was following me changed their picture and changed their name to Boris Johnson and then started commenting on my posts. Well, I assume it wasn't the real Boris Johnson. Maybe it was. Just saying, make sure that's your only one today, lad, and stuff like this. Which was quite entertaining for a while.
Yeah. And then I heard you, I was cheating with another podcast and heard you talking about a runner who set off on an FKT when the rules were you couldn't stay overnight or something. What was the story with that?
Yeah, so a really good runner here set off on a huge challenge called the Wainwrights in the Lake District, which is has gained a bit of popularity in the last few years. It's over 200 peaks, and you have to do them sort of consecutively. And she went out and started doing that, and she does live in the Lake District, so she wasn't sort of traveling to a new place. But the technicality was. Basically the head of police in that area is a fell runner. So it wasn't long before news reached him. and he went out and said, look, I'm really sorry. You can't do this at the moment. The technicality was you weren't allowed to stay out overnight, stay away from home overnight.
Right. Yeah.
At the time. And she said, well, I'm not staying out. I've been running all night. I'm not staying anywhere. And she wasn't being cheeky. She genuinely believed she wasn't breaking the rules because she wasn't going to be staying. She wasn't away from home as such. You know, she lived in the neighboring valley. But she was told to stop, unfortunately. She went out a few weeks later when she was allowed and did it all anyway.
Fantastic.
So there were quite a few of us, I think, kind of chomping at the bit, waiting. And I guess it's different. I think, in America, for example, I think it's been, you know, state by state almost. So different states have had different. But in Britain, you've had this sense of no one's allowed out. Well, no one's allowed to travel overnight. No one's allowed to go far. And then suddenly, okay, you can.
Yeah.
And all that time, people have been sort of scheming and getting fit and dreaming and looking at maps.
Yeah.
So it's been, been an exciting few weeks.
Yeah, it sure has. And it's been a real, in your summer of FKTs, isn't it? And, I mean, I was thinking too, I mean, you've always, you know, not always been about the FKTs, but you've got a fair few already. And then suddenly everyone's doing them. It's like, get off my patch, bro.
A little bit. No, yes, it has. Yes, a bit annoying. I'm hoping it goes back to normal racing next year and then people won't be trying to get my FKTs. Because, you know, one of two are in the balance a bit. So, and I don't know what it's like to have one taken off you yet. Although I imagine I might get that feeling quite soon. But, I don't know if I want that feeling.
Are you on Strava?
We'll see. Yeah.
So, you know, when you get those, well, I don't know if you've ever had a crown. I've only ever had one and it was by accident. And you get that email from someone, so-and-so stole your crown. There must be an FKT, FKT version of that. You're sitting at home and someone knocks on the door or something. I don't know. It's got to be grander than an email from Strava. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I wonder how it happened. Like, is it like the tooth fairy? Like, you wake up and look under your pillow and it's like, uh-oh, sorry. But here's 20p.
Well, ask John Kelly, actually. He'll know.
Yeah.
Except he was there, so it didn't really work that way. So. Anyway. Gosh, we're getting... I'm sorry about this. I'm leading you up terrible, terrible garden paths.
No, it's good. I must admit, I haven't got many crowns, but locally, just because there aren't loads of runners where I live, I did suddenly start getting loads of emails of people stealing my local crowns. Often they were ones, well, I pretend I didn't know I had them, but I did feel like everyone was out running and running faster. It got a bit annoying.
Yeah. They really were. I mean, FKTs have been and still are all the rage. And you, I mean, you're not a bad bimbo in the Pennine way. Well done.
Thank you, and great use of the B word. It did look a bit, maybe from distance, like, for those who don't know, you know, John Kelly broke the record that stood for 31 years, and I popped up 8 days later and broke his record, which I guess might seem a little bit mean-spirited.
To your so-called like to point friend.
Out, my former friend. I would like to point out, we both knew we were both going for it. We both knew we'd go for it probably in July. We'd been chatting about it since March, both of us. It was 4 years ago I first thought about this one because I did, well, actually, if you want the full story, I guess we've got a little while.
It goes back further than that, doesn't it? You mean you literally wrote the book about it?
Well, you've been doing some research, or at least reading an Instagram post or two. Yes.
that counts as deep investigative work in this podcast, I tell you.
I think it does, in the world. Yes, so about 9 years ago, I wasn't really a runner. I was a hiker, and I was lucky to be given a commission to write a guidebook for the Pennine Way, which was unbelievable, unbelievable kind of bit of luck, really. And I hiked it, took about 16 days, and I loved it. And it's right up the middle of England, for those who don't know. It's kind of very moorland. It's not really mountains. One or two of the bigger lumps might feel a bit mountainous, but you know, it's not high up really, and it's not mountains, nothing like in New Zealand. But it's boggy and it's moorland and it's quite bleak and windswept, and it does feel surprisingly remote for England. And it's our oldest national trail, and it's got a lot of history. And yeah, I wrote a guidebook for it, which was fantastic. Yeah, really enjoyed that project. And I remember reading in the previous guidebook about a guy called Mike Hartley who had run the whole thing in 2 days, 17 hours, 20 minutes and 15 seconds. And to me, that was just absurd. I wasn't a runner. This was, I think, before I'd even done my first half marathon. I might need to double check that. Maybe I'd done a first half marathon, but certainly didn't know much about ultra running. Mm. And I remember putting that in my updated book and thinking that's incredible. And then over the next few years, yeah, got more into this long distance lark. And then my first FKT was 2016, and I ran the Southwest Coast Path, which is, as you might guess, in the Southwest.
And a path.
Yeah.
and along the coast, I'm guessing?
And yes. How did you? Wow. You have done
research. I have done my research, yeah.
Yeah. I did that with, you know, two friends helped me. And I remember the drive home afterwards, we were discussing the kind of what next question, and the Pennine Way came up. But it was, to me, it was the biggest one. It wasn't as long, but it was a much more intimidating record set by a proper, you know, a proper runner. Mike Hartley was in the 1993 100K European Championships. He was fourth. So like, he's a fast, you know, quality athlete, you know, not just some sort of chiseled warhorse fell runner who just sort of hung in there and you know, put up with a few blisters. He's a proper runner. So, and obviously that record has, you know, stood for 31 years. So it was pretty good. It took me another 4 years to really build up the courage to think about it seriously. Every year I'd put it off a bit because, well, there was UTMB to do and things like that. There were other excuses, really. And then, of course, the lockdown took away all those excuses. I just thought, well, I've got to have a go now.
Yeah.
And I suppose I did. Yeah, I did learn. You know, John told me in person he was going to have a go at it too. And there was an element of, if he's got the courage to go for it, and he doesn't seem short of courage, he's incredibly ambitious with his challenges and FKTs. There was a bit of me thinking, well, if he's brave enough, I should flip him well, pluck up the courage as well. So I started plotting it, I suppose.
Just on Mike's record and how it stood for 31 years, was that, I've never had a sense, was that because people just didn't have, you know, it was sort of like a forgotten record that people didn't have a go at, or was it, wow, this is just such a daunting record, A, who's going to bother, or B, anyone who did just didn't get close?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, back in the day, so he said it in 1989, I do know that the person who set the record before him had attempted it six, possibly eight times before the person before him, who's also called Mike, set that record. Immediately after Mike Hartley set it, I don't know enough about my history back in the sort of early 90s to know whether there were people having a go then or not. But I do know in the last 4 or 5 years, I know of, Pavel Polonce tried twice. He's won the spine race three times, but he's tried in the summer twice. Another friend of mine tried and another guy tried. So I know of at least four attempts in the last sort of two to three years. So I think it maybe came back in vogue a bit in the last 2 or 3 years when FKTs have just mushroomed a bit. Yeah. And the Pennine Way has been one of the obvious kind of UK ones.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know of like four attempts.
Okay.
Yeah. But whether there was a decade or two in the middle where no one tried, I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I need to find that out, really.
There we go. You mentioned the history of it, and I love the story of the Pennine Way and how it came about and so on, and its connection to freedom walking. I don't know what you call it, but in the UK. Yeah. I wonder if you could go through that. But also, you did promise us when we set up this interview a bit of Britpop connection. So I wonder if you could just tell us the history and include that tantalising tidbit about Britpop.
I would love to. So yeah, part of the Pennine Way history. So we have a lot of land in Britain is still, well, we could go right back to sort of the Enclosures Act, which happens, I think, a couple of centuries ago, where basically all the rich people took a load of the land off the poor people and just said, that's our land now, get off. Or that's my understanding of it.
Literally, though.
And then in 1932, or in the early kind of 30s over here, you know, walkers, people from places like Manchester and northern cities who wanted to hit the hills of a weekend, grew increasingly frustrated that they couldn't go on those hills because they were privately owned, often for sort of hunting and shooting by, you know, private landlords who had lots of money and had lots of land that they, you know, weren't letting people on. And there was something called the mass trespass, which was an act of civil disobedience, which happened in 1932, where several hundred, I think mostly young men, gathered on Kinder Scout, which has become a kind of iconic peak in the Peak District since then. And there was a big sort of standoff, but a lot of these young men were arrested and put in prison for around a week. But that, you know, created enough kind of furore and attention that laws did start to change. It took a while, but basically, you know, a significant amount of that land now is open to us to wander on. There's still a huge amount of it is privately owned, and there's still controversies rumbling on now. But you know, that did change things at least. And one of the guys who was there was Tom Stevenson, who not long after heard about the Appalachian Trail in America and thought, wouldn't it be amazing if we had something in Britain? So he started dreaming up this idea of a Pennine Way, and it actually took him 30 years to get that, to get from that moment to get the Pennine Way, you know, sort of, you know, created. Wow. and authorized. So incredible, you know, work by him. He was a conscientious objector in the First World War, incidentally. Just fascinating guy who you know, got things done slowly and steadily. We owe him something. I love the idea that that was our kind of first, I suppose, national trail, but you can link it to the celebration of the, you know, the outdoors, the hills being opened up for sort of, I suppose, common folk to go and, you know, frolic in and bimble in. So I like to, I suppose, tell that story a bit because it, certainly in Britain, you know, maybe it gets forgotten and stuff. And it's important to know that, you know, I suppose people can get together and make a difference, and civil disobedience is you know, might be a legitimate tactic in lots of ways. But in terms of the much more important Britpop question, I'm going to let you guess. So,
oh no, Matt's the musical historian in our duo.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. All right. Well, all right. I'll give it away then. But the Pennine Way starts in a little village in the Peak District called Edale, just near Kinder Scout, one of the absolute sort of stars of Britpop now lives in that little village.
Drum roll.
It's he'd be well sorted for E's there because of there are two E's in the name. Edale, but he might not find any whiz. I don't know, but it's dum 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 dum. Jarvis Cocker lives in
Jarvis Cocker, really?
The end of the Pennine Way. Yes,
wow.
I don't think he turned out for my little. He didn't
play turn up and play a guitar or something.
I would have just died and gone to heaven if that had happened. That would have been,
I'll be. And is that why you chose the Pennine Way?
Yes.
Basically,
purely because of Jarvis.
Now it comes out.
That was incredible. I mean, Sheffield, you know, historically he and Pulp are from Sheffield, Sheffield's not super far from the Pennine Way in a way. He lives there now in a quite little village. Except when the Spine Race is on, or someone foolishly runs the Pennine Way in one go. Sorry, Jarvis, if you're listening.
He does actually. He writes in all the time. He's a bit of a pest actually. Like, just leave us alone.
Leave them behind, Jarvis.
He was trying to do live blogs for us, and we were just like, no, look, we'll talk to Damien. Just leave us alone. Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, that's a good bit of history and a bit of Britpop trivia. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, speaking of sort of celebrities, I mean, you when you did the Paddy Buckley round, that was pretty low key, wasn't it? You basically did it sort of pretty quietly, didn't you? I think. Mm. Whereas this time around, I mean, you had a film crew following you, and you were it's like every news channel I turned on, they were like breaking news, you know, sort of coming in with live updates of where you were and stuff. It was a big deal.
I think CNN were there, weren't they?
Yeah, and, I think so. Yeah, yeah. Al Jazeera did a live cross.
yeah, it was quite different this time. I guess there are several reasons for that. I wouldn't have designed it this way if it was all down to, I suppose ultimately I could have said no to things.
Sure.
But you had a combination of factors, I suppose. My wonderful sponsors, Innovate, were bringing out a new shoe. And then I suppose also I suppose there's a whole lockdown thing where, you know, I suppose companies were nervous. There were no shops open. So that maybe that made them, you know, I don't know, market their things a bit more heavily. But also my good friends, Matt and Ellie Green at Summit Fever Media, they were the ones who did most of the filming, and I guess they hadn't had anything to film for 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
So they were very happy to have something to film. Admittedly, again, so they're making a separate film about me and John's attempts, sort of comparing our approaches, and they filmed both of them. So they're making a separate film that will be out in October or November called Totally FKT'd, which people can pre-order.
Great title.
Pre-order at, I think it's summitfevermedia.com's website.
Right.
It'd be amazing if anyone is interested in doing it, because it's mostly self-funded.
Yeah, send us the link and we'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Because they work very, very, very hard and often sort of self-funded at times. Mm. So, Innovate sort of, you know, backed them and said, actually, well, and then Runner's World were involved because I was going to write a story for them. And then Runner's World suggested, what about daily videos? So it all got a bit crazy. So there was like 5 daily videos. And yes, that's more than you want, I think, in an ideal scenario. But I was pleased for my friends getting work, and meant I would see them out on the course regularly. When you're feeling, you know, absolutely shocking and there's a camera in your face, you know.
It's always good.
What do you want? But it keeps you motivated. But also, I mean, so I had all that. And also Innovate had done a separate video promoting this new shoe with me prancing around various lumps in the Lake District, which, you know, was beautifully shot and you know, amazing, you know, sort of camera craft and so on. But that was coming out at the same time. So I did feel, you know, there was a fair bit of pressure on me in that if I, you know, fell over in the first mile and face planted and, you know, or just got stuck in a bog or whatever, or just stuffed it up really badly, you know, it would all be filmed and straight out on social media and so on. And obviously Innovate wouldn't be thrilled that the guy who promoting their new amazing shoe for long distances couldn't run long distances very well. So there was quite, you know, but I guess I did... if I'm totally open with you, and I don't see any reason why I shouldn't.
Well,
be.
Go on.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I did work. I just out of curiosity, I did work a bit with a sports easy for me to say, psychologist for this.
Yeah.
Partly because it's just, you know, I'm a coach as well, and it's an area. I guess it's always intrigued me on a sort of fairly uninformed level, and I just thought actually it'd be fascinating to speak to a psychologists to get their viewpoint, partly on what I'm doing, but, you know, what tactics and strategies can I pass on to my clients as well. And I mean, it was quite an easy spin actually, but she kind of says, well, all those people, you know, they've got faith in you. They think you can do it, or they wouldn't be there, you know, and, right. And that was actually really reassuring. And of course I had a team of, runners with me at all times, you know, carrying stuff and helping navigation and so on. And likewise, I think once they're invested as well, I, you know, I tried not to think about it too much, but I had, you know, over 30 people, probably even 40 people in some way involved in this thing, which felt very sort of self-centered and stuff, but terrified me at times. Cause you think, well, some of them are giving up work for a day. Some of them are getting up at 3 in the morning to meet me on a, you know, in a storm on a hillside, etc. And so you can get a bit spun out by that if you think about it too much. But ultimately, I tried to think of it as in, you know, they've got faith in me. They think I can, or at least they're waiting, or at least they think it's going to be funny when I fail and they can take some good photos. But no, it all turned out all right.
So you managed to sort of turn that sort of, not negativity, but the pressure of all those other people and expectations into a positive through the help of your mental skills coach.
Yeah, I did. And I guess there were some other tactics, like I suppose the classic kind of, you know your why are you doing it? So I guess I tried to bring in some environmental stuff to sort of fire me up and keep me motivated. I decided to try and fuel without animal products and fuel without creating any plastic waste, which is actually much more difficult because so much of our hill food, our hill snacks, comes in plastic wrappers. And that took a bit of research, but it was quite satisfying to be able to do. Obviously, things like, you know, bananas and stuff are quite easy to you know, the plastic wrapper there. They come with quite a good wrapper already.
They do. So what else? So you were avoiding plastic wrappers or wrappers in
yes.
your yeah yeah.
So my rule was kind of I set out with the idea of could I do it without any plastic waste?
Yeah.
I probably achieved that sort of 95%.
Yeah.
Occasionally, I think possibly the only thing I know of definitely was I did need some electrolytes at times. And I found a company that, you know, the plastic tube you could recycle, but the actual lid you can't. And that's partly because it needs to keep the moisture for those tablets. So there were a tiny aberrations like that. But all the – I'm pretty sure everything else, you know, I researched it to find out. I used some wonderful companies like I don't think you can get them down there, but Outdoor Provisions make, you know, fully compostable wrappers. And, you know, and I don't know, nowadays you can buy bread in recyclable packaging and so on and so on. But I spent a lot of time researching that sort of stuff, and it was quite, you know, it cost a lot more.
Yeah.
But it was quite satisfying to be able to do it. And we decided to pick up litter as well, which is almost an afterthought.
Yeah.
But actually, that's the thing that got more attention. And if I'm honest, it was mostly my pacers picking up the rubbish.
Your rubbish, or?
Yeah, well, I actually think John Kelly, I think because he went a week before me, I reckon he was trying to blame me. Like, you know.
He was trying to slow you down by littering the trail.
Scattering it around. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that rascal was onto something there.
Yeah. I want to talk about that sort of how that came about and stuff. But also, you just mentioned there, you're talking about, you obviously prepared for this like a Zen master. And I've seen you talk, I think you've said that you prepared for this more than anything else or something. And you got a coach, worked on your running technique and a nutritionalist and strength and conditioning work and so on. So, and the mental skills coach, which you mentioned, but this was a real campaign almost for you.
Yeah. Well, I thought, I guess in a way, lockdown gave me too much thinking time, I suppose.
Right.
So I got almost, I wouldn't say I got too obsessed, but I just thought I'm going to, you know, this record, I've been thinking about it for 4 years. If I don't go and get it, John Kelly's going to get it. So I've got to put everything I've got into it. I even, you know, I was still at the turn of the year, I still did some journalism quite regularly. I did about 6 days of sub editing on a great magazine up here called Women's Running. And I canceled that with a short term financial sort of deficit for me. I canceled it so that I had more time.
Right.
To plan the logistics for this, because I thought well, actually, what's funny is me and John both actually have the same coach, David Roach in America, and who's Scott Hawker's coach as well. So he coaches, you know, pretty much all the best runners in the world and me. So he's very, very good. So I thought, well, I thought I'm not probably going to have a fitness advantage on John because we've got the same coach and we're living in the same area and so on. So I wasn't too obsessed with John, but it was like, how can I make my approach better? So I thought, you know, logistically, you know, I want to get the best possible team. So, I sort of even hired a van from Volkswagen. They gave it to me for free. But, I got a van so there's more space for my crew, more space for food and kit, more space to lie down and maybe sleep better. You know, even 10 or 15 minutes of sleep that I might not get in the back of, you know, a much smaller vehicle could make the difference. Mm. So I roped in two very good friends, Mark and Tim, who I've known for years and who are really experienced at this sort of thing and who know what I'm like when I'm grumpy and miserable. And they're good at, yeah, they were sort of a good cop, bad cop combination. So I kind of roped them in early. I did everything I could think of, really. So I thought logistics and teamwork could be the difference because John's already an incredible runner. And obviously Mike was an incredible runner, although it's fascinating to compare, really, I think, running conditions 30 years later. I mean, the Pennine Way has changed a little bit. There are a few more flagstones. But then we've got much better kit nowadays, haven't we? We've got watches, better navigation equipment, much better nutrition knowledge. You know, 30 years, it's huge difference. But then you could say for Mike Hartley back in the day, actually, I know he had a really dry summer here in 1989. So he had a really dry terrain, whereas neither me nor John had that. It was still pretty boggy and wet. It's interesting to compare. But I did everything I could think of. It wasn't a plucky amateur effort. I was putting everything into it, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I really saw it as, you know, just something I've been planning for 4 years, really, or thinking of for 4 years. I wanted to do it right, I suppose.
And that's, I mean, interesting you mentioned Scotty Hawker, because that approach that he took to UTMB, where he just basically decided, I'm not going to leave any stone unturned. I'm going to get the mental skills coach. I'm going to do everything I possibly can, work on my nutrition, everything. And that's, I guess what I'm figuring out is that's what it takes. And my sort of amateurish approach is not the way.
What fires me personally is several things fire me, but I'm 44. I don't know how old you are, but I
47. Well,
how old are you?
47.
Okay, there's still time. but I feel like I don't have much time to be at my best at this.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't want to mess around on sort of internet forums asking, you know, Nobby from Norwich what he thinks about, my swollen ankle. So I have, right from the beginning, actually, I've nearly always had a coach. I had two years self-coach, actually, and that did lead to my best performance at UTMB, but I just felt I was ready for a coach again. And I just thought, I am just fascinated in this sport as well. There are so many aspects to it, aren't there?
Yeah.
I must admit, things like the technique coach, I've worked with him for years, a guy called Shane Benzie. He's got a book that's just come out, actually, called The Lost Art of Running, which I'd recommend. I'll send you a link as well.
Look at the link as well. We've got a list of links coming up.
Definitely. I'm trying to plug all my friends. So there are some people I've worked with for years, a sports dietitian up here as well. I mean, I don't consult her that often, but once or twice a year, so that's what I love about our sport, because I'm not very fast, my marathon PB isn't great, but there are so many other elements when it comes to the long stuff, whether it's the strength, technique, the nutrition, the mind, the mindset, you know, it's fascinating. So I want to tap into all of those and learn all I can, I suppose, and then hopefully pass it on to my clients as well, but only after I've beaten John Kelly at FKT just a few days after he did. Sorry, John.
Sorry, not sorry. So let's deal with that then. John posted something where he said, watching Damien's tracker did feel a bit like watching a friend go after an ex. In the end, you're happy they're both happy, but it feels weird. It's like, I can imagine him watching that. But so you guys, you discussed it, didn't you? It's not like sudden, you know, he got a surprise or anything, but you'd actually talked about it after a training run or something in the Brecon Beacons. But stage you were going to do it together in opposite directions, but that quite didn't work out. So it's kind of you are friends, but you were also chasing the same thing. That must have been a little bit weird.
Well, yes.
Sorry, I'm not sure which part of that question you want to answer. Just take your pick.
Well, I do feel a bit bad about how it all panned out. I guess I look up to John I'm sure, far more than he looks up to me, because, you know, he's the Barclay Marathon, the Barclays Marathon, Barclay Marathon's guy, you know, and he moved a year ago, just over a year ago, to not far away from me. And it was like, oh my God, you know, one of the greatest ultra runners in the world lives down the road.
Yeah.
So I'm a fan, you know, firstly. So I wouldn't say I never thought I could beat, you know, do a better time than John. And to be fair to John, he had terrible sort of tummy issues the whole time. Yeah. So I think it's fair to say he didn't have his kind of best run there. Whereas
where were you in relation to his nutrition, by the way? You went tampering or anything?
I couldn't possibly comment on.
Sorry, I'm throwing all sorts of allegations at you in this. This supposed to be friendly chat. Oh my God! What, can't keep the journalist out of me. Sorry. Carry on.
So
he didn't. His didn't go so well. So there was that. But he did break the record.
Yes. Yeah. And I was. Well, to take you back to something you were mentioning is, we haven't actually been able to catch up all that often for training runs, but, you know, partly we both got young families, but it just so happened we were both on a training run together in March when the lockdowns in both Britain, and I think it was the same day that Trump said, you know, he's banning flights from Europe or something. So it was quite a dramatic day.
Right.
And obviously most days after that for the next few weeks were dramatic, but it felt like a big dramatic day. And I think we both began to realize a lot of races might be cancelled. Obviously a lot of other things were going on too, but that, you know, things might not be as planned this year. Yeah. He was already committed to Fenway. I don't think he'd gone public with it, but he had told me before that in a WhatsApp message. And on that drive back, I think I was driving him back home. I definitely said something along the lines of, if UTMB gets cancelled, I quite fancy going to the Pennine Way as well. I've thought about it for a long, you know, quite a long time. And I had, when David Roach took me on as a coach, it was top of my list, and he kind of talked me out of it, saying, you know, save the longer stuff for a few years, you know, do some races for now. And I was easy. It was easy to be talked out of because it was intimidating to me. But, and John straight away said, I think the next day he sent me a message saying kind of, hey, if we want, we could run it together. I must admit, I loved the idea that he would offer that. That was really kind of him. Mm. But I actually think the chance of that going well, I mean, it's going to be, you know, at one stage early on, one of you is going to be running at a different pace to the other one. So I didn't actually think that would be a satisfying outcome. And then I suggested starting at either end at the same time, which for a while seemed like a really fun idea.
Yeah.
And then I must admit, I wavered on that sometimes. I sometimes thought, actually, I don't want the extra stress of that, because in FKT, the whole great thing is you can decide almost all the variables, not always the weather in Britain, but you can, you know, you pick the date, you pick how it's done. Yeah. And then you've got this extra stress of someone else doing it at the same time, which I think would force most people to probably go a bit quicker than they might want to. So I wavered on that. Sometimes I was keen, sometimes I wasn't. But ultimately, the week he wanted to go, I couldn't get my crew people that week, one of my key crew people. And I actually thought, what's most important to me? No, my most important thing is to put my best run in. And to do that, I want my two guys there if I can get them. So I decided to go the week after him.
Yeah.
So that's what happened, I suppose. I guess... Yeah, I don't think it would. I think I think both those other scenarios would have been really entertaining for everyone else, but probably would have gone badly for me or John.
Yeah.
Or both of us. And actually what happened is we both got to break a record, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah.
And he got to say he broke a record that stood for 31 years. I only broke one that stood for 8 days, so that doesn't sound nearly as impressive.
That's true. And he broke it by 11 minutes something, didn't he? So once you saw that... I guess
it was more like 34. I think it was over half an hour. So
it was half an hour. Okay, I'm making this up as I go along.
So. In ultra running times, that's quite, you know, pretty close.
It was pretty close. But I guess where I was getting to was it was close enough that it was obviously a tight run thing, but it still left room for you. So where did that leave you in terms of your mindset, you know, at the start line?
I must admit, that was kind of the scenario I hoped for, in that. I wouldn't ever have wished him to have a bad run.
Sure.
I wanted him to break the record, you know, as a friend, but I didn't want him to break it by too much.
Yeah.
So that was honestly my best case scenario, was he broke the record by only a small amount. So I actually felt really optimistic, because he had shown it was beatable. So, you know, for 31 years, if someone like John Kelly I suppose if he'd had a good run and not beaten it, I would have been like, oh my God, you know, yeah. I've got no chance. Like, even John Kelly can't beat it. So he'd beaten it, but not had a great time doing it. And that gave me, gave me hope.
So it did give you hope rather than like, oh gosh, she's only just beaten it. Which might have been its own factor.
Because I was aware he'd had a really rough time, like right from the beginning. He had a tummy problem before he even started running. I think he didn't feel quite right. So he had a really, you know, he really didn't get the calories in that he wanted to get in, you know, almost the whole time. He has hinted he might try again next year. So he might be able to get his revenge on me. But we'll see.
Yeah. And does the fact, I'm not sure what's recognised, but the fact that you ran opposite ways, does that mean that he kind of still holds that record as opposed to the overall record?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's a bit like maybe on the Appalachian Trail when Scott Jarrett went one way and Carl Meltzer. I leave that sort of thing up to other people, really, about whether, you know, I don't know, whether they talk about the different records or not. It was interesting. You know, it was a key decision, I think, which direction. And I went the same way as Mike Hartley. Yeah. And I did phone him up and you know, had a good chat to him on the phone too. And he was generous with his time to learn everything I could from him that he was willing to share. And he'd gone south, partly because it was running home. And partly because you do get some of the bigger hills out the way earlier and some of the more remote sections. But also I just wanted to go south because I'd gone north three times. I've done the spine race twice as well.
Right.
And I just didn't want to get too bored of the Pennine Way. So I always like the idea of going the other direction. I'll leave that up to other people, whether they recognize two records or not. John's was obviously a very strong run.
And then you became the Carl Meltzer to his Scott Jurek in exactly the same way.
I suppose I'm probably not what's the word for Carl Meltzer? Yes. I'm a big fan of him.
Yeah.
I'm not as outspoken. What's the word? Forthright. I'm not as forthright as him.
Yeah. You think 100 miles is that far?
It is that far. Yes, and 260 miles is further, I can confirm. I'm a big fan of Carl Meltzer. Yeah. And if you want to put me in the same sentence as him, I'll be very chuffed. Yes.
The other, I mean, you were inspired by and part of your motivation was the environment and we spoke about this at length last time. It is something that, you know, that you believe in and you want to make a difference. And I guess I was trying to figure out, you know, and we talked about this a little bit at the top of the show about this year of COVID where we haven't been able to travel and stuff, which has been good for the environment, but in some ways the way that we've responded to COVID shows us what we could do for the environment a little bit. Somebody said, why doesn't the environment get COVID's PR guy?
It was incredible. I don't know if you felt the same, but like there was a period we had really good weather in April and May, all really good for Britain. And so often I was just sitting in the back garden with my kids and I'd look up at the sky and I'd go, wow, the sky is so blue today. And because there were no planes, you know, polluting the sky. And I imagine there's some similarities there. It was like, wow. And that's just, you know, one of many, many examples. In some ways it gave, I think, is a lot of hope in that a lot of people, and I've got a lot of coaching clients who, you know, they feel they have to fly a lot for work, for example, but they're saying to me, I'm not going to fly as much anymore, partly for environmental reasons, partly I just don't want to, or I don't need to. I realize I don't need to fly, all these flights for meetings. So I hope that's going along around the world to an extent. So I think it did show us a lot, you know, what did we need to do all this travel? Did we need to do all these things? But I guess my fear is that, governments will need to kickstart economies and then green regulations will be sort of, it's happening over here already, you know, sort of cut, you know, ripped up and forgotten about. But I think it will have shown, you know, hopefully people who care about these things, maybe some hope. Really interesting. You know, it's been a fascinating year so far and we're only just over halfway through it. Yeah.
It's the 48th of something. Yeah. The other thing too is that it's showed us that as a global community, we can respond strongly and we can respond forcefully to a threat. And, you know, the ice melting and everything is a threat. It's just slow moving and we kind of put it off all the time.
Yeah. And we've maybe got a bit almost fatigued by it as well, I think. And I was, you know, I just saw the same headlines every day, blah, 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 hottest day ever, something, something melting, blah, 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 mountain shrinking or something, you know, and there are none of those insects left anymore. And after a while, you're just like, no, I think I had that last week. And you realize it was a different thing altogether. So I don't know what the solution is necessarily, but I don't know if Extinction Rebellion have got any sort of groups down there, but they're going to be doing some more protests again soon here. I don't know how they'll be received. But I guess it's, yeah, trying to remind people that we're in an alarming situation, I suppose.
I don't have the answers,
but I think it was an optimistic time in that regard.
Well, I guess you say you don't have any answers, but the answer that you've come up with is to do things yourself, you know, to take those steps that you can take, control what you can control, make choices, make, you know, don't try and, you know, try to not to use plastic, all those sorts of things that we can each do ourselves.
I suppose so. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I've got two very inspiring friends up here. I don't know if their companies are known down there in the trail running community, but there's a guy, an amazing guy called Dan Lawson, who just ran one end of the country to the other.
Yeah.
But he's got, and he's, you know, he's an international ultra runner, but he's got this company called Rerun Clothing, who have been looking after all the unwanted race t-shirts for starters.
Oh, wow.
And all the sort of, yeah, and especially this year, it's been terrible, obviously, because all these races have got the t-shirts printed and then no one's got the t-shirts. And who wants to wear, you know, London Marathon 2020 t-shirt when it didn't even happen? So he's really looking to the side of the waste side of, you know, and he manages to get the get stuff, I suppose, recycled, but often out to, you know, to refugees or to areas of the world where, you know, people might actually want those clothing.
Right.
So they're called Rerun Clothing, and they're
another link to send us, please.
Yes, no, I will. And him and his wife and his two daughters as well are involved in it.
Fantastic.
And they've even done a shoe bank. So companies, including again, my sponsors Innovate have been quite good, he tells me, in getting involved. They, you know, so many of these companies have lots of seconds or just minor faults, just the tiniest faults on a shoe, and they can't sell that shoe and it just never gets used. So they give them to Rerun Clothing and they form like a shoe bank. And then if someone, you know, can't afford running kit or has very little income, they can write an email and basically just ask. There's an element of sort of checking, but no one should be put off from asking. You can basically ask them for some running kit and they will, you know, they will give you some running kit, that's very good, you know, in good condition. My other friend, another friend who's very inspiring up here, is Jim Mann, who's he's a record breaking fell runner.
Sorry, can I just stop you? Do you have to be an amazing ultra runner to be a friend of Damien Hall? Is that like a prerequisite? Do you make people present you your CV? What are your credentials? Okay, mate, you can be my friend. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, I put you off. Carry on.
You do. The ultra running is still quite small here.
It is.
We all know each other. We're all friends.
Yes.
Unless you steal each other's records, and then it's. In fact, I did break one of Jim Mann's this year as well. This is my way of repaying him by mentioning his. They're not actually a charity, but they're called Trees Not Tees. Have you heard of those? The idea is when you sign up. He's mostly doing it for British races for now. But when you sign up for a race in Britain, if they've joined the scheme. When you sign up, there'll be a button saying, you know, do you want a t-shirt?
Yeah.
Or do you want a tree planted?
Wow. Because
so many of us don't need a race t-shirt, but they've already been produced or ordered, you know.
Yeah.
So that has really caught on. He only started that this year. It's mushroomed. He's getting, you know, looking for more employees all the time because it's just mushroomed out of control almost. And it's really simple. He makes it really simple for the race organizers. So then it doesn't cost them anything. And then he goes and plants, he's buying land, regularly to find places to plant trees. Mm. And he has an ecology degree, so he's not just sort of not swinging it. And he'll send those people. They get a grid reference of exactly where their tree is. This is, it's only been going a few months, and it's just everyone's gone, of course, why weren't we doing this?
Yeah.
So that's gone really, really well so far. So those guys, people who are doing things like that have really inspired me. And I couldn't think of a better idea other than, pick up a bit of litter and try to use less plastic. But, it was more than I was doing. So
you were doing your thing. But those are great ideas.
Yeah, I'll send you some links afterwards, because maybe they're things that can be replicated elsewhere. I imagine they could be. So it's really inspiring when you see these grassroots sort of things taking off and just really catching on quickly, which just proves it was exactly what people were, sort of wanted.
Absolutely.
Encouraging.
We had a very tiny version of what Dan Lawson is doing. Not what he's doing, but it brings to mind when we interviewed a group called Speed Freaks, who are a running group based at a drug rehab program down in Christchurch in the South Island of New Zealand, and they're people who during their drug rehabilitation get introduced to running, and of course they don't have gear, they don't have shoes, all sorts of stuff. And after our show, heaps of listeners sort of got in touch and said, "I want to help. I've got shoes that I've worn a couple of times, and I don't like them. And rather than throwing them away, can I send them to?" And there was that sort of thing. So reusing, because there is a lot of waste in trail running.
Gear
that people buy that they don't use or they don't like, or for whatever reason they're not using anymore. And rather than sending it to the dump, it gets if there is ways of making sure that we can reduce that waste and people who need it get it. It's fantastic, isn't it? So I really applaud what Dan's doing and what Jim's doing. It's great.
Yeah, and it's raised awareness because so many of us, we just finish a race, we're handed a T-shirt and a medal that we didn't really think about.
Sure.
We didn't. And there are races. And I think, if you run your first half marathon, sure, you want a T-shirt. And I think that's perfectly legitimate.
Of course.
No one's trying to cancel that altogether.
No.
But for a lot of us, when we've done a few years of racing, we don't need another T-shirt or another medal, and we're not going to use it probably. Let's ideally stop producing them in the first place, I suppose. But if they can be, if they can be passed on to someone who needs them, then brilliant.
Hey, Damien, we've kept you for long enough, and I don't want to bore you with the question that we ask everyone, because we asked it of you last time. So I did want to have a different approach to it. We usually ask people for their greatest run ever, which you gave us last time. But this time around, I want to ask you, comparing FKT, your Pennine Way FKT, with your fifth place at UTMB, does one come out ahead of the other?
Oh, gosh.
I'm putting you on the spot.
You are. I mean, I have already been asked kind of where would I place the Pennine Way thing, and I placed those two as my most memorable moments in running in a way. What a question. I don't know.
Choose your favorite child. Go.
What I loved about the Pennine Way thing was I got to share it with a lot of people. UTMB, I mean, you got wonderful crowds there and stuff, but you're not really, you're running away from people or trying to catch people. And an FKT is a bit different, isn't it? Just so many people turned out to run with me or to hand me a cup of tea or to just support me at a roadside or just shout something, hopefully, which was probably supportive. And that at the moment, that feels a bit more special because it was just this big shared thing. Mm. So at the moment that feels more special, but I suppose if I'm honest, it was, although I'm chatting to people in a different country, it was more of a parochial thing, more of a British thing. Whereas I suppose UTMB was more international, but that at the moment that feels more special, but I suppose that might be classic rock, classic rock star saying their new album is the best work when clearly it isn't. Whenever they say that, it never is.
As Jarvis Cocker will tell you.
Well, yeah, and I mean their new stuff is, it's not quite as good as it was. difficult one.
Yeah.
But I felt very incredibly satisfied, and that was because I could share it with so many people. So thank you everyone who helped. and followed and stuff.
Well, we certainly, you captured our imagination down here, and we loved following you. And thank you for telling that story, which I know because you're such a rock star, you've told it a million times. But it's always so entertaining talking to you. So thank you very, very much for joining us.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
I'm really sorry for my confusion, and I threw Damien during that conversation. I kept on going on and on about how John, you know, when I kept on going on and on about John lowering the record by 11 minutes, and clearly Damien was just going, until he corrected me, just confirmed that John Kelly did indeed lower the record by 40 minutes, not 11. Duh.
Oh.
Yeah. And did you get your bit Brit pop trivia?
Yeah, Jarvis Cocker, who, and you know, Damien Hall said that, you know, Pulp was his favourite sort of Britpop era band.
Yeah.
Lives in that tiny little village.
Yeah, indeed.
There you go.
There you go. Right, thank you for tuning in. We are on social media at Dirt Church Radio. Email dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. Oh, by the way, all those links that he talked about during the conversation are all up on our show notes, so go check them out.
Fantastic. And you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. You can download direct from the website, dirtchurchradio.com. Also, if we're not where you want us, let us know. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us. If you like what you see, please spread the love. It'd be great, as many people heard the show as possible. And for that, we need your help.
We also need your help with Greatest Runs Ever.
Do it. Write in.
Go
please.
On. Write in. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks to our sponsors, Scott Running, Feather Faster, Spring Energy, and Cieli. And thank you to our Patreon supporters and Wild Things. Thanks to our editor, Kieran. And we've got a really great guest lined up for next week. So tune in then. Ka kite.
Ka kite. Thanks, Rigby.